on 2UE. George and Paul's Crime File.
And today it's Horror in Paradise, the murder of Sian Kingi.
Yes, George, last week, as you will recall, we spoke to Michael Carr Gregg about keeping your kiddies close, or helicopter parents or who hover, free-range parents who let their kids do virtually whatever they wish. I commented that no matter how close you keep them, sometimes there's no helping them because of circumstances. This is one of those horrible cases. It was little wonder that Barry Watts was tiring of his wife, Valmé. Once very attractive, she was now a bloated, frumpy, garbage-mouthed, bleached blonde. Both were habitual offenders with extensive criminal records for almost every crime in the book. They had been introduced in Perth and were married soon after. Valmé Faye Beck, 44, a grandmother with six children from her two previous marriages, was 10 years older than her husband. Barry Watts was Valmé Beck's obsession, and she did as he desired. It would lead her down a path of evil that she would never, ever have imagined. An orphan from Townsville, Barry Watts left home at 16 and moved to Perth, where he became recognised as an habitual offender. When Watts and Beck took off in their white Holden station wagon for Queensland in 1987, Valmé Beck was on bail for false pretences and Watts was on bail for armed robbery. They arrived in Brisbane Valley and stayed with relatives at Lowood. Watts' constant fantasies for a young girl had put the marriage under enormous pressure, and Valmé Beck lived in constant fear of losing the man she adored. With his wife at his side and approving his every move, the pair began cruising the beaches and parks along the north coast of Brisbane in search of a victim, and in November 1987 they wound up at Noosa on the Sunshine Coast. Barry and Linda Kingi moved to Noosa from New Zealand in 1982 to give their three young children a better lifestyle. 12-year-old Sian Kingi was one of the most popular students at Noosa's Sunshine Beach State School and excelled at jazz, ballet and sports. On the afternoon of Friday, 27 November 1987, Sian, still in her school uniform, went shopping and then to the beautician's with her mum and decided to ride her bike through home through the busy local park, just like riding through Hyde Park here. Friends of Sian saw her ride by at around 5:30 p.m. From there, she disappeared. When Sian hadn't arrived home, her mother went looking for her, and in nearby Pinneroo Park, she found Sian's bike. A group of picnickers who arrived at 5:40 p.m. saw the bike lying on the ground, but no Sian. They recalled seeing a white Holden station wagon in the area at the time. Other witnesses said they saw a short, blonde-haired man approach Sian. Mrs. Kingi had no way of knowing that it wasn't a man who had approached Sian. It was a short woman with bleached blonde hair. On Monday the 16th, police officers, along with hundreds of volunteers, searched every inch of Pinneroo Park. Nothing was found. Police throughout Australia were put on alert for a white 1973-74 Holden Kingswood station wagon with curtains, a sun visor and mag wheels, driven by a short blonde-haired man in his early 30s. A week later, Sian's body was found on the embankment of a creek about 20 kilometres from where she was last seen. Sian had been assaulted, strangled and stabbed to death. On the 11th of December at Ipswich, about 20 kilometres away out of Brisbane, a 24-year-old woman escaped a vicious knife attack and abduction at a shopping centre by a man and a woman driving a white Holden station wagon with black and white plates. The couple in the attempted abduction at Ipswich matched the description of a couple seen acting suspiciously at Pinneroo Park when Sian went missing. The witness remembered the pair and recalled that their car had black and white WA plates. Initially, the police had no reason to suspect that a couple could be involved. Surely to God, no woman would be party to the rape and murder of a schoolgirl. A report came in from Lowood that the description fitting a couple who had stayed there. They were Barry John Watts and Valma Faye Beck, who had skipped bail on serious charges in Perth. But when a report came through that Valma Beck was a mother of six and a grandmother, detectives found it even harder to believe that she would be involved. Watts and Beck were arrested at a motel at the entrance in New South Wales on the 12th of December. 2 days later, they were extradited to Queensland, where they were questioned and charged with the murder, rape and deprivation of liberty of Sian Kingi and the attempted murder of the woman in Ipswich. When Watts and Beck appeared at the Noosa courthouse, they were greeted by an angry crowd of locals waving placards saying, "No air for this pair, hang 'em." They didn't enter a plea and sat stony-faced as the court heard that Valma Beck had signed a confession about her involvement in the murder of Sian Kingi and the knife attack on the woman in Ipswich. At their committal hearing, Valma Beck didn't enter a plea and Barry Watts pleaded not guilty. The court heard conversations between Watts and Beck that he had been secretly recorded as they waited trial in adjoining bugged cells. They said, in part, this is part of their conversation, Beck to Watts, "To commit rape is one thing, but to kill someone in cold blood with no compassion is something else." Watts replied, "I wanted to do it again. Remember, you wanted to do it again as well. That's abduct someone else and murder them." Watts and Beck were committed for trial because Beck had pleaded guilty to all charges except murder and Barry Watts had pleaded not guilty. Their trials were held separately. At Beck's trial in October 1988, the court heard more of the bug conversations between the pair as they waited to be charged. Beck, "We're going to jail for life, Barry." Watts, "You've turned out into a really, really staunch wife. A really good wife, a good loving wife. You hung me. Good on you, top wife." The court heard that on the day of the murder, Valma Beck spoke to Sian Kingi in the park and asked her if she had seen a small French poodle. As she did so, Watts snatched Sian off her bike and bundled her into the back of the station wagon where he taped her hands and mouth as Beck quickly drove away. That's the husband and wife pair working together. After they arrived at the creek, Beck watched as Barry Watts assaulted Sian, but while Watts was killing Sian, Valma Beck took her dog to the other side of the car so the animal couldn't see what was going on. She actually said it was too horrible for her pet poodle to witness. It took the jury 4 hours to find Valma Beck guilty of all charges, including murder. In sentencing her to life imprisonment, Mr. Justice Kelly said that she was a callous and depraved woman. "No decent person could not feel revulsion at what you did. And you, a mother with children of your own," he said. At his trial in the Brisbane Supreme Court, February 1990, Barry Watts pleaded not guilty, claiming his wife committed the murder on her own and he knew nothing of it until they were picked up. But his wife's evidence was damning and he was found guilty on all counts. In sentencing Watts to life imprisonment, Mr. Justice Kelly described him as a thoroughly evil man devoid of any sense of morality who should never be released. In May 2009, Valma Beck underwent heart surgery in Townsville General Hospital and was placed in an induced coma but never regained consciousness. Such was public opinion of the murderess that it sparked a public outcry that Beck had been allowed any treatment at all, forcing Premier Anna Bligh to defend Beck's rights to taxpayer-funded health care. Barry Watts, he will die in jail.